Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Golden State Warriors went into a situation in Phoenix where they didn't have much of a puncher's chance because Steph Curry and Draymond Green weren't even in the building. They asked Nico Mannion to start. I thought he played pretty well. They asked James Wiseman to play more minutes than he ever has in his career. That is exactly what I need to see asked of him time and time again. I want to. And I want to see more Jordan Poole because he looked about as ready for his close-up after he did everything this team asked him to do, and he hasn't been dobbered down, not for a day of his career. The guy just says, okay, I'll go do that. Whatever professional you need me to be right now is the guy I'm willing to go be. He had himself a good offseason. He came back with better career shooting splits. Even though it was garbage time, it wasn't really valued by the Warriors. He has his biggest output of the year in the game right before they send him to the G League bubble. He goes into the bubble, comes out of it, and in the first time he's asked to hit the court, he gives you a new career high. 26 off the bench last night. In the vacuum of Poole alone, that might be an important moment in the Warriors' remainder of the season in the second half. I really want to see Jordan Poole and Nico Mannion get all the Brad Wanamaker minutes. And if I'm Steph Curry, I'm taking some ownership here, and I'm saying, you know, there's an awful lot of chatter about this year being a wasted year, and what do we need to do? What we need to do is play our worst player less. Like, that is an addition by subtraction right there. It's available. We can do it. With zero cap considerations, we can bench Brad Wanamaker for free today. It costs zero to sit him down. It costs games to continue to play him, and we're not developing our present or our future when we do it. It's time to stop wasting my time, Steph Curry should say, with minutes for Brad Wanamaker. It ain't working out. I mean, you don't need to be an NBA basketball coach to know. How about this? Only the Warriors NBA basketball coaches would insist they see something that we don't. Collective basketball planet sees that Brad Wanamaker ain't worth lacing up anymore. Do you think they got the guts to do it?
I don't know. I think that sort of depends on how quickly Oubre comes back. I think it depends on whether they can get out of ninth and start flirting with seventh or sixth. And I also think some of it is on Poole and Mannion to show that they can play a better level of defense that will satisfy Kerr. And maybe that happens right after the break. I can't say. But I think when you have a young player, it's kind of up to him to show the coach, hey, I can do what you ask me to do. And I think they're okay with his offense. I think they would like him to be a better defender so that they don't have to make, you know, what you see as an easy choice more difficult. So I think some of that is entirely on Poole.
Well, the problem with that is he hasn't been given that opportunity. So we can say, well, he's got to show them he could defend, but when? When is he supposed to do that? He hasn't really had a single meaningful minute with the team this season. I mean, before he got sent down, it was almost all garbage time. And last night, I guess take what you will from the fact that they sent Steph and Draymond home and played Poole and Mannion a ton. Maybe that is their first opportunity. But again, when I watched last night, I didn't see guys that were so overmatched on defense you can't play them. I saw guys who probably are not at this stage in their careers as good defenders as Brad Wanamaker, but not a huge difference. Not a, oh my God, you can't afford to do this difference, not by any stretch. So
right. When did Brad Wanamaker become Gary Payton?
Right, he's not. He's a good defender. He's probably an above average defender, but he's not elite. And he's not special on that end. He's a pretty good defender. And good for him, that's a quality that made the Warriors want to sign him. But he's so bad offensively that it does absolutely zero for you to have a slightly above-average defender on the floor if he's such a minus on offense that he's killing you regularly. And that's what Brad Wanamaker has been. So show me until I would go the other way. Rather than saying Jordan Poole has to play enough defense to prove something, Jordan Poole has to be so bad defensively that he hurts the team on a regular basis, or else he's a better option than Brad Wanamaker.
Right. Yes, Poole has to play better at all times. That's the mandate for all young players in this league. So nothing there changes.
Be improving.
What needs, I think, to change is the rope Steve Kerr gives these young guys to make a mistake in an NBA game. Because, again, you can't say we're not chasing wins and not prioritize development in the same year. It's one or the other, buddy. Like, Steve, we love you. But that is going to be the sentence that haunts you all year long. If you ain't chasing wins, you better be developing. And the funny thing is you've got such yawns for veterans that the guys you want to chase wins with, I don't even think give you the best chance of chasing wins. Like, all you're doing is retarding the development of young, important players. And you're not winning games along the way to doing that. So I really think that Steve and Bob Myers need to have a kumbaya about how they are developing guys, what mistakes they're willing to live with in the name of development, and this fascination with just easily replaceable NBA talents. I mean, easily replaceable talents. Needs to stop. You just knock it off. Yeah, Kevon Looney's a really nice player. You know what he is on most other teams? Not on the team. Or if he is, he's the 12th guy, and he's played as such. Oh, but he does all these little things and all the da-da-da-da-da. I am less concerned about the little things that he can do about the big things I think James Wiseman's going to do for you. I don't care about the little nuances of Kevon Looney's game. I really don't. I don't care.
And there's no one saying cut Kevon Looney.
Right. No,
so
he can stay.
It's not even an issue. All those little subtle things he does for 12, 15 minutes a game, he can still do for 12, 15 minutes a game. We're just going to make them different minutes because the other minutes are important to developing the 19-year-old potential superstar.
Right. How Kevon Looney plays well with Steph Curry and Draymond Green doesn't equal whether or not the future is bright. James Wiseman playing with them equals whether or not the future is bright. And there's no tap dancing around that. There's no way to out-clever me on that position. Like, Steve Kerr can't do it. Bob Myers can't do it. An NBA Hall of Famer. You can't be more right than what we're saying right here. James Wiseman is more important than the Warriors being comfortable with how James Wiseman is going around and playing. Like, I just play the number two pick in the draft like he's the number two pick in the draft. Play him. Play him more. Don't play him less. Has a bad day, bad minute. Work through it. Andrew Wiggins last night, again, he disappointed me because it was a night where I thought a guy who's reluctant to step outside of who he is was in a situation that should have encouraged him to get a little bit more aggressive. Again, just clap for the ball once. demand the ball once. I dare you. I didn't see it once in the first half. Maybe we'll see it in the second half. I'm certainly not going to hold my breath for it. What I do want to see, and this is important for you sticking around long-term plans, Andrew Wiggins, has Andrew Wiggins, do you think, passed the ball to James Wiseman once yet this year? I don't think I've seen it. I don't think he has passed the ball to James Wiseman once.
I think
I'm sure
it
might have
night.
Happened accidentally, but I don't think it's happened in the course of like a well-thought-out offensive possession. I don't know. It just seems like there's no. Everyone needs to be working on their chemistry with James Wiseman. Everybody. Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson. When you can get the boot off and get out there, you got to do it too. James Wiseman is now officially as important as anybody on this team.
I thought we saw that last night. I mean, that's one of the reasons I made the point earlier that even if he wasn't explicitly asked not to go off himself, I do think Andrew Wiggins was, you know, or there was a conversation in the locker room about running the offense and playing through James Wiseman. They sent it into him an awful lot last night, and I thought Wiggins was a part of that. I haven't, you know, the other stuff I think anyone would notice, but I haven't noticed any sort of lack of chemistry between he and Wiseman.
I guess I'm not identifying it. Like you say, you don't see the lack of it. I don't see the evidence of it. I don't remember a singular moment between the two of them yet. Nico Mannion has had more minutes of, hey, look at that. That was an outstanding little moment between Nico Mannion and James Wiseman, I think, have developed a better chemistry in however many on-court minutes they shared last night than what I've seen so far from Andrew Wiggins and James Wiseman. I haven't seen a two-man game out of them, not for a second. I haven't seen a single pick and roll, nothing. Nothing. But again, I don't know. I understand the Warriors want to play the way they want to play, and they want to play the way they want to play all the time. Last night was a full blank canvas one-off to try something different. And again, you got to be able to have a plan B. You got to have plan B. Now, you can't tell me, well, plan A is fundamental basketball. Yeah, that's always been plan A. It's plan A of a 10-year-old team at the Y, fundamental basketball. Let's keep the ball moving around. It's not.
It's really not in the NBA, though. I mean, that's why this is interesting. You know, the motion-based offense of the style the Warriors prefer is not the normal offense of NBA teams right now.
All good ones, it is, though. Like all the good, like Utah whips it around. 76ers passing it around. Lakers.
The 76ers really don't move the way the Warriors do. Neither do the Lakers. The Utah is a good example. Utah is playing that style, and it's sort of a Popovichian style in a lot of ways. It's what they ran to perfection to beat the Heat in that finals. And you know, I think a lot of NBA fans remember that as the Heatles versus, oh my God, look at how the Spurs are passing, right? Like that's what that finals kind of was. And that's certainly the style pursued by Utah. Philly, though, and L.A., it's a lot more pick and roll. It's a lot more put the ball in Ben Simmons or LeBron James's hands and let them play make. It's not the same pure philosophical idea that Steve Kerr has. And I think, frankly, that's why some people are critical of him, is because they think he values that philosophy over, you know, star power or other things that different people value. But I do think it's the core philosophy to the way Steve does it. And I think it maybe either as a result of that or because they both felt this way beforehand, it's a core philosophy of the whole organization. And it's just not going to change, even if for one night it might have changed your winning odds a small bit.
I think that's true. I think they want Wiseman to learn to be the best thing he can be within that style. They want him to be a multifaceted big man, not just, you know, catch a lob, you know, put your ass against the basket and, you know, wait for somebody. I mean, it's not, they don't do two-man game. They don't do ISO. They do movement, and they're always going to.
Yeah, and I don't think any team would not want James Wiseman to be a multifaceted big man. I mean, that's what his talent looks like he can be, and lots of teams have that, you know, and Anthony Davis is that. Nikola Jokic is that. There's different versions of it. Joel Embiid is that. But the Warriors believe it's not just, hey, we want James Wiseman to be his best self, but only within our system. It's not like that. It's more an overarching basketball philosophy. We believe this is how basketball is best played, and we believe the best way for James Wiseman to be the best version of himself is to play this way and come up in this system and understand the game the way we do. I mean, I think most good organizations have an operational philosophy of some kind in that vein. And for the Warriors, it's never going to be about valuing the individual over the team. It doesn't mean people within the organization don't realize Steph Curry is the best player. It means that they think the best way to maximize Steph Curry is to seamlessly weave him into a larger whole that thereby becomes greater.
And Curry didn't play last night. So again, it feels like a night that if
but
you had a
plan B. But they still believe that.
Right.
That's the point. It's not a matter of plan A is ball movement, plan B is Andrew Wiggins goes ISO. It's a matter of no matter who's out here, the best way to play basketball is to be the very definition of a team and move it. I guarantee you, if Steph Curry was out there last night and Draymond and Wiggins and whoever were not playing, Steve Kerr is still going to disappoint you with how much he wants Steph Curry to shoot the ball. Guaranteed. Because he doesn't want, even in that scenario, even if you just flipped Wiggins and Steph last night. And look, to all of us, we can obviously imagine your best chance is probably Steph Curry with 30 shots tonight. But that's not what Steve Kerr is going to want in that situation because he believes in team basketball and that no matter who it is on the floor, no matter how that distributes itself out, that's the way to win.
Well, I hope everyone's prepared to miss the playoffs this year then because that's probably how it goes unless you allow your unquestioned talent to get a little bit more selfish with it when you have so many talented
Would you have said that three games ago, though?
Yeah.
Like three games ago, they were basically in the sixth spot.
They got to score more.
And they've been doing it by playing this way. And, yeah, the offense has to get better, but is it because Steph Curry needs to score more? I would argue no. It's because the bench hasn't been good enough. It's because Brad Wanamaker is useless offensively.
Right.
You know,
well, that's why they started with play Brad Wanamaker less and Nico Mannion more and Poole more. And
yeah, agree with that.
Yeah, how many times in a row are they going to have to go out and like does Jordan Poole now have to have a career high 27 in his next game to convince the Warriors that he's the right way to go again? Whatever defensively. I really don't care. He can score from all three levels, and you got one guy who can do that, and his name is Steph Curry right now on this team.
Yeah. Well, you know, Wiggins occasionally. Oubre can do that occasionally. But to add another guy who seems to be able to do it occasionally would be a huge add for this team. And to me, I think the most important question I have, I feel like, regarding sort of the rotation moving forward, is was last night just an opportunity to play those guys because your big names were gone and you were basically throwing the game out anyway? Or was last night an opportunity for those guys to earn more playing time? Because I don't think there's any way you could have watched the game last night if you were giving Nico Mannion and Jordan Poole a real opportunity. I think it's clear they both earned more. So I think that's the real test. When we come back, if it's Brad Wanamaker for 15 minutes and DNPs for Nico and Jordan, we're going to know this was not a real opportunity to prove themselves and get some minutes. It was just garbage time extended.
Here's the thing. I haven't taken a flamethrower out in a really long time. That's how it happens. That's how angry Damon shows up on the radio. It's been a while since we've seen angry, pissed off. Come on, Steve Kerr, you're my friend now. We don't yell at you. But we might have to start yelling. At least I will. I really mean it. I can't take another minute of Brad Wanamaker and this team seriously at the same time. Because
you
got
have
alternatives.
To be able to defend
right
it to me, right? Yeah, you have to be able to defend it to me in a way that makes sense. And if the defense for Brad Wanamaker has been the defense, I think we've gotten to the point where it's clear that he's not playing good enough defense to outweigh the miserable offense he's playing. So if there's some other reason to put him out there that I'm not thinking of, explain it to me. But the, well, he does what we like defensively is no longer sufficient.
It's, yeah, I mean, you know, we're probably overreacting to one game. I mean, you know, if in fact you come out of the break and they still don't see the wisdom in those guys, yeah, at some point Bob Myers is going to have to explain why. At some point Steve Kerr is going to have to explain why. Because I don't think this is happening in a vacuum. I think this is, you know, this is clearly the two of them believing the same thing. And now we're going to find out what that same thing is. Because I cannot imagine them working at cross purposes on any player.
There's a difference between working at cross purposes and just not agreeing. I think one of the interesting things here is they're so good at working together in the Warriors front office that it does present as a unified front all the time. Like, can you ever think of a time where we've even gotten reports or suggestions of, like, you know, Steve would really prefer to be playing this guy, but Bob Myers is saying it's all about so-and-so instead? We never hear about that, but I guarantee those two guys, both of whom are very opinionated, I guarantee they disagree at times. So I wonder, you know, if Steve Kerr feels like he wants to lean on Brad Wanamaker, but Bob Myers feels like it's time for Poole and Mannion to get more minutes, who wins that argument? I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer.
By the way, just to, because we don't, we could just go round and round and round and round and round and round. Can we just, one more element of Jordan Poole, without declaring him the single greatest basketball player we've ever seen. There is definitely a guy who was asked to go do something that this team, you know, go to the G League and get better. And so he's like, yeah, okay, I'm going to go ahead and do that. And he did it. Like, yep, he really went out there and he did it. And I got to tell you, that's good for him. And it's a really nice step out of the G League. Salute to the G League. Like, the G League, it's all of a sudden it went from a roll my eyes, I didn't even want to hear about it, NBA entity, to a clear minor league that is going to give teams that understand how to use it an advantage over the teams that don't. There is a developmental vehicle in the NBA's minor league now that is so valuable, especially for a team that's got, you know, Santa Cruz just down the road. Like, the Warriors are so set up with a good G League program. Boy, you better start using its results to your benefit. And I think you got good results out of it. Jordan Poole was asked about what the G League did, what the staff down there did to help unlock his game. Here's Jordan Poole on his G League moment.
Just allowing me to play my game. I think the coaches that have down there trusted me to lead those guys and try to put them in the best, put us in the best position to win. And, you know, it just felt good to be a part of big minutes, to be a part of a big game. And they wanted it to translate, and it has so far. So shout out to the coaching staff and the crew.
There you go. It's a very nice little diplomatic answer. He could have ended it at, well, they played me. They actually let me play basketball, which, you know, is a good way to show you how I can play basketball.
Totally. But look, you know, he had plenty of opportunity to play last year, and he wasn't ready. So I can understand coming into this year thinking he's not ready. But I also, here's what I would not understand. And I don't, to the Warriors' credit, I assume Jordan Poole will be in the rotation in the second half. Like, that's what I expect to happen, not just because I think it's the thing to do, but because I expect them to do the right thing. But I don't think it would be good for his development or even really, like, a cool, it would be a very unchill thing for them to do, to say to him, listen, we can't find you minutes here, so we're sending you to the G League to get some time and hopefully get your confidence up, get a little more comfortable, get some run in. He goes down, not only does that, but plays at a very high level, like second or third in scoring in the G League while he was down there. Looks more confident, handling the ball well, attacking the rim, scoring on multiple levels like we've been talking about. And then to say, all right, kid, hustle on back here, and have it turn out the only reason we brought you back is so Steph and Draymond could go home to the Bay for Draymond's birthday, and you could play 20 minutes in Phoenix but never have a real opportunity to get into the actual rotation, that would not be good. And I don't see the Warriors doing that to a guy that they liked enough to draft.
I hope you're right. I absolutely
hope you're
right.
Let alone a guy
right.
They're still committed to contractually.
Right.
Right. You keep
they
on
just picked
up
his option for next year. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they like Jordan Poole just fine. And I don't think that's how you treat a guy you like just fine. I mean, they left Smiley-Geach down there, and he's using a major, you know, a big squad roster spot. So not everybody came up. You know what I mean? Like, I think this is a real sign that they do intend to play Jordan Poole more in the second half of the season, and I hope that's right.
In our pre-show FaceTime conversation, one of the things that we agreed on was today was going to be a really, really easy show because, boy, Sports Talk Radio gods gave us a little slice of, well, that's an easy topic to get people involved in. And I'm like, man, that's it. We got to go with that as part of the show today. And 3 hours and 27 minutes into the show, I haven't even brought it up not once yet. That we've just been rolling on other things. But boy, ABC's got something cool coming up this weekend. At least I think it is. 2020, kind of always hindsight. And you know, looking back, what was a great, important sporting event. There is a digital remaster of the Ali Frazier fight from what will be the day before its 50-year anniversary, Sunday, 11 a.m. our time on ABC, a digital remaster of Ali versus Frazier. That sounds pretty cool. I have already set the DVR to tape that bad boy, and it can't help but get you thinking of all the stuff that you saw before HD, before we had, you know, the aspect ratio, which all the TVs enjoy now. If you had to go back and digitally remaster some old sporting events to show them in better quality than anyone's ever seen, what would you start plucking from? And obviously, Muhammad Ali Frazier is right there. This has got to be done to the Rumble in the Jungle and Ali Foreman as well. What pops into your minds? You can digitally remaster any sports memory from before the HD era to see it again. What would you like to see first? Matt, you and I both grew up as Bears fans. I think we both thought at the same time. Give me like any game from 85. It probably wouldn't be a national hit because it was so one-sided. The Bears just destroyed everybody. The national game that people would want to see would be the game that they lost against the Miami Dolphins. And if you wanted to digitally remaster that, well, here's the thing. I'd go ahead. Like, just give me that team presented modernly. Like, I'd like to see it, even the loss.
I was thinking, yeah, that maybe one of the wins over the Packers or something like that in the regular season, because, of course, none of the playoff games were competitive at all.
Right. And but I don't think they've beaten the Packers since 85, so that would just be nice to see.
I'm pretty sure they haven't beaten them twice since 85. But for me, the reasoning is, you know, I never really watched that team. I've seen every game on a video somewhere, and I've seen all the replays and all that stuff, so I've seen that team a lot. But I didn't get to watch it live, so getting to experience a better view of it would really mean a lot to me personally. I mean, I was 4 years old. I missed
there
it.
There you go. We're not going to hold you guilty of being four at the time.
I will.
How dare you?
Yeah. I have two, and none of them involve Chicago teams.
It's probably
but
good.
But I'm older, and I never lived in Chicago. So the first one is the triple overtime game in the 76 NBA final between Phoenix and Boston, which is one of the great games in the history of the sport. And it
who's
doesn't
on that
get
Phoenix
mentioned,
team?
And you don't see it much. It was the Gar Hurd game.
Okay.
Gar Hurd, Alvin Adams. It was game three. It was the pivotal game ultimately in the series because Boston goes on to win, like I said, three overtimes by two, and then they won in five. It wasn't a great series, but that was a great game.
Wasn't there like two half-court shots at the end of OTs or something?
Well, yeah, Hurd hit one at the end of the first overtime, I believe. That was, you know, it was not only a long distance shot, it was Curry level distance, and it was contested, I think, by Dennis Johnson. And I just remember Brett Musburger had three coronaries on it.
Stephen in Vallejo says, Michael Jordan's dunk contest. Yeah, there's clearly a lot of moments of Jordan's career. To me, even though the Bulls lost the game, 63 at the Garden in the postseason?
Yeah.
I would love to. Was it 62 or 63?
63. And that's early Jordan. That's you know, pre-championship, obviously, playing against Bird Celtics. That's a good one.
How about this? I'm not going to browbeat anybody with a singular Indiana Final Four memory. Give me Duke beating undefeated UNLV. That would be a hell of a game to see again. That UNLV team was stacked, by the way. And that's maybe the greatest coached night of Kay's career.
It was there. Yeah. It was definitely there. The other one that I liked is the Miracle at Manchester, where it's a playoff game between the Kings and Oilers, where the Kings were down 5-0 after two periods. The Oilers were in their mid-Gretzky phase where they were just loaded on loaded, and the Kings ended up winning in overtime.
Well, you know what else? And I don't even think there's enough remastering in the world to make it really exciting on a high def TV, but like early baseball, you know, really the first 50 years of baseball, whether that's Babe Ruth or Hank Aaron or Willie Mays in his prime, if you could really see the tape of Willie Mays in his prime, that would be incredible.
Jackie.
Well, every once in a while, MLB every once in a while, MLB Network shows the Don Larsen perfect game beginning to end. And I think I'd kind of like to see that, even though having seen it a number of times in really substandard def, you know, the real problem is that there are so few camera angles that even remastering it, sort of, you still don't get the feel. But yeah, if you could do that, I'd like to see early Mays in New York playing in that gigantic center field in the Polo Grounds.
Yeah.
Early Jackie Robinson, like before 51, you know, when he was still sort of at the height of his powers. I'd like to see any game in which Roberto Clemente throws a ball, because nobody in the history of the sport has ever had a better arm.
Andre Dawson.
No.
Vlad Guerrero was pretty good, too.
Yeah. Oh, no. There are guys who had great arms, but Roberto Clemente could do things that,
I believe,
frankly, everybody envied.
Give me some Dr. J taking on some Kentucky Colonels ABA basketball.
My father just texted to say Elvin against Jabbar when Houston broke UCLA's winning streak.
In the Astrodome?
College basketball. In the Astrodome, correct.
Hell yeah. I'd love to see that. Would love to see that. Give me some Gabe Kapler. Old Circus of the Stars. Like, I'd love to see
Gabe Kaplan.
Gabe Kaplan, not Gabe Kapler. Not Giants manager. Gabe Kaplan. Yeah,
when
welcome
you said
back,
some
Carter.
Old Gabe Kapler. I was like, which game are we going for here?
He was all in high def doing push-ups in the beginning of his career. I know what that looked like.
Yeah, please make a list of all his great game.
Beefcakey. I don't know. There's never been a manager in Major League Baseball who looks better with his shirt off. I'll give him that much.
That's true. That is true.
I mean, you know,
Lasorda.
Maybe Joe Torre. Maybe Tommy Lasorda, but probably not.
But you hit on one. I mean, some of those ABA games before David Thompson blew up his knee, he probably was the best jumper you ever saw. I'd like to see Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game, even though there's no film of it at all.
So many Tyson fights. Yeah, no doubt about it. How about Jesse Owens, 36 Olympics? It's one of the – I don't know if we got the right footage to remaster that coming out of that.
I mean, that's the problem. We don't have the right footage for most of this stuff. So, you know, even the Ali fight, I don't know. It's not all of a sudden going to be in super high def. You know, like, let's not over – set our expectations too high, but if we start playing the imagination game, it's a long list.
Oh, it's great too. It's you get caught up in the member berries of it so quickly. It's good times.
And it's also things that we heard about growing up, you know, that like how cool would it be to see those historic moments that your dad or grandfather told you about?
It feels like we're all looking for something to watch. And this is a great idea that maybe somebody had at the beginning of the pandemic, and it's finally hitting the air now. Like, and somebody asked earlier, is this the Rumble in the Jungle? No.
No.
No, it's not. This is the
that's
night.
That's a different one.
That's three. Three, exactly. Rumble in the Jungle was Ollie Foreman 3. Ollie Frazier.
Thriller in Manila.
That's
it gets confusing
Manila.
Out here, man.
Here's the thing. They all got when you got multiple fights with great names, yeah. But there's absolutely no doubt that this was a night to remaster, not just for the boxing in the ring, but the show outside of the ring. Remember, Frank Sinatra famously applied to be a Sports Illustrated photographer. And he was one of the ringside photographers because he had to sit ringside. And Frank Sinatra didn't have any other access to a ringside seat. So he became a photographer for Sports Illustrated that night. You had anyone who was anyone in New York going to Madison Square Garden for that. And this is back when brothers were showing up in full-length minks with the hat and the spats and the cane. It was just the height of, what, late 60s, Ray? If we're coming out of the 50-year anniversary? 71. Thank you very much. So, but that's about as late 60s as it gets.
That was some hard math right there.
Yeah, that's as late 60s as it gets, though. 71 is the latest 60s you can find. And
just for the record, Thrilla in Manila was 3, you know, Ollie Frazier 3. Rumble in the Jungle was Foreman.
Yes.
When, you know, Ali's very old. This fight was called the fight of the century.
Oh, well, it was Ali's return to the ring after the suspension, and, you know, America was very much behind. Look at it this way. White America loved Frazier in this fight. Loved him.
I'll tell you what, old America liked Frazier, young America liked Ali.
Totally.
And I think it was more than just a racial divide. I think it was a generational one.
Because the
thing about Ali was he went to the Supreme Court to resist the draft, to go to Vietnam. And I think that turned a lot of young folks across the board ethnically toward him. And so I remember it distinctly. It was very much young v. old.
Well, I tell you, everyone's looking for a little something to watch because we're not going to have any basketball in the next week or so. I gave you a couple Netflix documentaries to keep an eye on a week or two ago. I don't know what you guys didn't see, didn't watch. I got another one for you, a real quick recommendation. So you got to be into the following things. And if you're not, you're not going to like it. If you are, this is for you. You got to be into samurais, ninjas, almost anything, which I am. You got to be into well-documented scholars talking passionately about their favorite subject, which I am. You got to be into maps, arrows on maps showing you which way an army is moving, and maps with boundaries that like fade and grow due to power structure. Like, I love a map. I love a color-coded map.
If Risk fans, that, this one's for you.
Totally. If you're into that, if you're into samurai, shogun, feudalistic Japan warlords, Oda Nobunaga, Toyotomi Hideyoshi, if these are names that mean anything to you, Age of the Samurai on Netflix, The Battle for Japan, was right up my alley. I would see how a lot of people would think it's boring because it's old talking man, here's a map, here's a reenaction. Old talking man, here's a map, here's a reenaction. And it's 6 episodes of that. But I loved it.
In the style of History Channel.
It totally is in the style of History Channel, which is right up my alley. When we come
The alternative is doing CGI of all the characters there in the Al Davis, Pete Rozelle style. I'll take old man talking in a bench anytime.
Damn right.
Right up your alley, no doubt about it. We take a real quick break before we come on back with Kolsky's Corner, right around the corner here on 95.7 The Game. In the meantime, we will let you know in our final Exergen temperature check, it is 55, partly cloudy and beautiful downtown San Francisco.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Matt Kolsky takes us back to a simpler time.
Hey, Stella!
To appreciate the pop culture that's aged like a fine wine.
Well, listen, this is a fine song and dance.
What are you getting so hot about?
Keep your shirt on.
Where do you get off making remarks like that?
Supposing I say you're a lunkhead.
Well, I ain't much for supposing.
It's time for Kolsky's Corner on 95.7 The Game.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Kolsky's Corner. And this week, you know, we kind of teased it without even knowing it was it yesterday, Damon, because I already had in mind the musical tribute I wanted to engage in today. So for people who already heard it, they may have guessed. But for those of you who have not, let's play some tunes.
That it's your heart and nobody else's that is going to judge. Be not selfish in your doing. Pass it on. Your brothers in their needs, pass it on. Live for yourself. If you will live in vain.
That is the song Pass It On. Anyone who's heard the classic Bob Marley and the Wailers album Burnin' knows that song. It was written and lead sung by Bunny Wailer, who passed away this week. And if you don't know who Bunny Wailer was, first of all, he's the percussionist of the Wailers, the original percussionist. But maybe more importantly, before he ever played an instrument, he got together with his buddies Bob Marley and Peter Tosh and decided to form a band called the Wailers that was going to take ska and turn it into something new. And that sort of changed the entire music world forever. So RIP to Bunny Wailer. I believe Peter Tosh is still with us, but the only original Wailer left now.
I think you're right, and I remember some very old Scottalites records where they were the backing group for, mm-hmm. for the Wailers before they broke out on their own, and he was listed then as Bunny Livingston, and so yep. I've always sort of thought of him as that. But absolutely, yeah, he... That band was seminal to music of all kinds, probably up to the present day, because I can hear what they did in a lot of rap, just as I can hear a lot of Sly and the Family Stone in a lot of rap. So yeah. It's not it you know, there's definitely a line that you can draw from them to here.
Neville O'Reilly Livingston was one of the three men who basically constitute the Holy Trinity of reggae.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just no doubt about it. And, yeah, there are definitely other guys that come in and play an important part when you talk about the whole history of reggae, but the history of reggae does not start, does not end, does not – you can't even talk about it without Bob Marley, the Wailers, Peter Tosh, Bunny Wailer – and it was just, yeah, I mean, it's one of the most influential moments in music history.
No doubt. And that album, Burnin', came out in 1973, which is really the beginning of Bob Marley's career, as most people are aware of it. It was the last album that Tosh and Bunny were both on. And that, you know, then they all sort of went their separate ways, launched solo careers. But that's sort of the origins of reggae as we know it, and it's also the first album of theirs, I'm fairly sure, maybe it's the second, that was produced by Lee Scratch Perry, who, of course, has gone on to be one of the biggest artists and producers in reggae history and still works to this day. So that album and that group is really the origin of an entire style of music.
Sad to share.
By the way,
with you.
Shame on me.
Yeah.
Peter Tosh died in 1987.
Peter Tosh.
Oh, my God. I said I thought he was still with us. I was Samsonite. I was way off.
I've always said Peter Tosh said something that is one of the most true things, and I can't believe we haven't already gotten to it, but with the legalization of marijuana, legalize it, and I will advertise it. I mean, come on. Let's go.
Shout out Peter Tosh.
This show
Man, you're right.
needs its own strand.
Ooh. Hey, now Seth Rogen's in the game. As someone who can, you know, pass as Seth Rogen in the right situation, why not us?
Which one of us passes more as Rogan in the right situation, you or me?
It's a great question.
We both share strong Rogan tendencies.
I think it depends. I think that the answer to that question probably depends on how each of us has cut his hair and beard, and also how much each of us has eaten in the last 2 weeks.
And him. Like,
yes,
what mode
him.
Is he
yeah.
in? Is he in, I just came out of the barber, I've been working towards a respectable movie, and so I'm a little...
I think...
It's you.
Honestly...
If it's heavy, Seth, it's me.
Yeah, but to be honest, I think in general, we all look more like each other as we grow facial hair and add weight.
I was going to answer the question, what we should call the show's strain. I got Dr. Kush.
Oh.
How do you feel about that?
Oh, dude, that's a round of applause. Dr. Kush, very well done. I really like what you did there. That's a good Seth Rogen laugh for us as well. All right, which brings us to the movie, which I cheated. It's not a movie. Matter of fact, you know the theme. The theme is Bunny. Tell me if you can identify this.
There was a small moment of damn genius by some nameless smoke hound who comes out to cut rate one day. And on his way to the corner, he slips that just bought pint of elderberry into a paper bag. A great moment of civic compromise. That small, wrinkle-ass paper bag allowed the corner boys to have their drink in peace, and it gave us permission to go and do police work. There's never been a paper bag for drugs. Until now.
Ray Ratto, do you know what that's from?
That is from The Wire. That is Bunny Colvin explaining Amsterdam.
Amsterdam. That's season 3 of The Wire, Bunny Colvin. Yes, indeed. Outstanding poll. I didn't know right at the beginning what that was. It's been a while, so it took a minute. And then as soon as he got to the wrinkly paper bag, there's only one man who's this crazy to be this brilliant.
I was lucky because my wife had never seen The Wire, so we are watching it as we speak. We're right in the middle of season 3, so I had recently watched this. So as I thought about, God, what can I do with the Wailers? Like, is there a reggae movie I should do when I couldn't think of anything? And then I was like, well, what about Bunny? I immediately thought of the paper bag speech from The Wire. And just, I had this conversation with our normal board operator and co-producer, Nash Solomon, last night. He has not seen The Wire. If you have not seen The Wire, it is really, truly, actually, definitively the greatest show in television history, and you really, really, really need to watch it. Now, it's a commitment. You have to pay attention. It is occasionally slow, but the reward, oh, friends, the reward is spectacular. You must watch The Wire.
Did you have any trouble, and I know we got to go quick here, did you have any trouble pulling Joey through season 2? I know that's a breaking point for a lot of people.
Not really. Not really. And you know what? As I watched it back, it's just, if you, as long as you're paying attention and locked in, it's so good.
The
it's
only
just
thing
so
wrong with season 2 is when you see the entire Wire and you start measuring it against season 3, 4, and 5.
Exactly.
Like, that's the only thing wrong with it. That the show just kept getting better and better and better and more interesting. It's good.
But you can't have 3, 4, and 5 without 2. Because
amen.
2 sets
that's
up
right.
so much other stuff.
All the pieces matter, Ray.
The docs, all the pieces. God, that was great. I really thought that your Bugs Bunny might have brought us to like some Elmer Fudd, Bugs Bunny, operatic something sound today. So I'm proud of all of us. I really am. I'm proud of Monty Friday. Thank you to Monty McCutcheon and Monty Poole for joining us. Thanks to Mark Medina. Sam, great stuff in the studio in for Nash today, who hopefully is watching The Wire somewhere. Thank you, Lucas, as always. I'll be back in a week. We'll talk to you all then. In the meantime, thank you so much for tuning in. For Ray, for Matt, I'm Damon. Sports don't build character. They reveal it.